Miss Fraser, and friends. This large gathering this evening is extremely encouraging. The work of animal welfare in the world is not a popular cause, and all animal welfare people are in some cases faced with a forlorn hope, because cruelty to animals is definitely on the increase in the world today. Indeed, cruelty in itself to men and animals is greatly on the increase in the world today, particularly as nations are planning and now have in their power weapons which could destroy the human race and which have already been used with the most terrible, heart-rending results. We, however, are concerned with the animal kingdom of nature, and we all consider, for various reasons, that a reduction of man's cruelty to animals is a most urgent necessity, as my title indicates. The four component societies are fighting hard battles to keep going and to carry out their work. They're each of them short of workers. And that is why I feel, and I know the members of those societies feel, happy, encouraged at your attendance, for which we all thank you very much. It's most encouraging. Fortunately, too, there are encouraging signs in the world. The picture is not all dark. Dark though it is, and we better face it. Just shortly before coming, I've had perhaps the most heartening letter in animal welfare I've had since a similar message came to me from New Zealand. Miss Fraser spoke of the work of the Council of the Combined Animal Welfare Organizations of New Zealand in obtaining legislation making compulsory the use of humane methods of slaughtering, mechanical methods which kill instantly. I was over in Australia when that was gazetted, and the news launched me, as it were, without much reference to myself, in a similar campaign in Australia. And in the five states, campaigns have been waging, and in some of them, with success. So that the reduction of the terrible suffering inflicted on animals in the breeding, transportation, and slaughtering of food animals is being reduced. Now, the good news is that similar efforts by animal lovers in the United States, and again, I had the privilege of joining with them in the campaign, particularly in its inception, have met with success. Here's the letter from the United States Senate, from one of the senators, Mr. Prescott Bush, to one of the workers for humane slaughtering of food animals in America. In view of your deep interest in a humane slaughtering bill, I'm happy to advise you. This is from the United States Senate. I'm happy to advise you that by a vote of 72-9, the House version of this 72-9, the House version of this legislation making mandatory the application of a humane methods of slaughtering was carried. So it's now law in America that food animals, the slaughter of which is almost beyond number, both for personal consumption and the great packing houses, now must be done by the most humane methods possible. Another great encouragement in a great fight. But there is so much more to be done, isn't there? One of the ways they campaigned over there was to have me make a movie film of myself lecturing, have made a movie film of myself lecturing on the subject, bringing to bear all the arguments we used here and in Australia, the basic arguments. It was in colour, and in between the main points, there are movie films in colour of the slaughterhouses, what is to be seen, what is done, what is to be seen there. It's a horror film. And then a vegetarian methods of nutrition with all the beauties of orchard and cornfields, fruits and nuts, also displayed in marked contrast. I hear from friends who've seen it that it is a very powerful presentation, particularly because of the coloured pictures of the slaughterhouse. Well, that's been going round America for 2 years now, and they've succeeded. So that's most encouraging to us. I suppose you've all seen in the paper that there was cruelty up to the point of death in the shipping of live cattle to America. The last report, you may have noticed, was that up to 100 were found dead at the end of the voyage. That just, it's an indication of what is involved. These great beasts have strong hold on life and they're not easily killed. 100 died because of the conditions on the voyage. When we first saw this in CAWO, we took action and wrote to the Honourable C.F. Skinner, MP, Minister of Agriculture at the House, and asked him certain questions about this evil and this unnecessary cruelty and suffering. Rather strong letter, which I won't take time by reading to you. I just learned from our secretary that as yet we've not had an answer, though our letter went on the 12th of August. A similar letter was sent to the Secretary of the Federation of Farmers in the U.S. at the U.S. At a U.S. firm in Hobson Street. I learn that we've not yet again had answers to that. Another encouraging sign is that the League for the Abolition of Cruel Sports, a very active animal welfare body in England, is attacking the cruel sport problem very effectively. They watch the Grand National, which is one of the most cruel of steeplechases, in which many horses are so badly injured that they have to be shot, and only a few out of a large entry finish the course. They attack that and they bring suits against people whenever possible. But they have long been attacking the horrible blood sport, I think, of stag hunting, which is a popular sport amongst a certain class of people in Britain. They've done two things. Most of the hunting is done in Exmoor, in Cornwall and Devon, in the great open moors where there are a considerable number of wild stags. They hunt them to death. I saw in the magazine, which came yesterday, that a hunted stag managed to get into the garden and up to the garage door of a house. The lady of the house went out and saw that it was bleeding, panting, and had shot wounds. And the hounds came baying up to it. She went to her gate and forbade the hunt to come in, or rather forbade them to come and kill the animal in her garden. So they got hold of the stag and dragged it outside into the road and shot it there. That stag had been hunted 3 times. What have they done? Well, they've bought 200 acres of Exmoor to be a deer sanctuary. And hunted deer can get into it, but hunters can't. It's a closed personal property, right in the middle of the stag hunting area. And another thing they've done, which is to, on the mornings before the hunts, they now spread aniseed trails all over the place where the hunting's going to be. With the result that the hounds, of course, pick up these various attractive scents, and off they go in all directions. Of course, there are storms of protest against this by the hunting fraternity, which comprises the great majority of English people, but not all. So you see, in these and other ways, this all-important work of the protection of animals from ill treatment by man is going on, and there is a brave and inspired minority in the world which is keeping on in spite of every setback and all the opposition, official and public and private. All honour to them, I feel we should say. Now, Miss Fraser has spoken to us about our hosts for this evening, the Council of the Combined Animal Welfare Organisation of New Zealand, and that makes me feel I want to just say a word or two about it. May I say to the members of the component societies who are here, would you please ask your societies to take full advantage of their opportunity of representation on the council? Each one of the societies is allowed 4 representatives. We don't always have the 4. And we're so glad of those 16 people sitting together in our regular meetings. Then we greatly appreciate the annual donations we receive. In order to help us to carry out the World Week for Animals campaign, of which Miss Fraser has also spoken, we receive generous donations from our component societies, which are much appreciated. We are put to a very considerable expense, but by good management and the help we receive, we're in reasonable funds. But the more money we have, of course, the more active we can be in this all-important field. Therefore, any donations would be most welcome. The Secretary is here this evening, or Miss Fraser will inform you. We have produced some literature, 3 books, in fact, on animal welfare, and they are available in quantity, I believe, and it would help to spread our gospel of humaneness if you would help to spread this literature. Now, as Miss Fraser has said, World Week for Animals, which is our great week, comes in the first week of October, and we're having our big gathering in the concert chamber of the town hall. I do want to appeal to you strongly for support of that meeting, please. Do come if you can. Bring friends and children up to a certain age, able to understand, and let us make this a very great occasion again. There will be stalls which the various societies will put up, and their literature will be distributed. The walls will be lined by the paintings of the children, which are a delight in themselves. The winners will come up and receive their prizes. And there's going to be a nice entertainment, including Maori concert. So will you please keep that in mind? October the 6th, concert chamber, town hall. Monday. It's a Monday in the week. Please come and help us in that work. We all meet here this evening, I suppose, as convinced lovers of animals. We're not sentimentalists about it. And it's very easy to become sentimental, particularly about pets and animals, and not do very much for their welfare actively. We like to think of ourselves as workers, though also feeling deeply in our hearts the sad lot of animals. We believe that animals can think and feel and anticipate and experience sorrow and loneliness and suffer very great pain, often in a peculiarly sensitive way. How important, therefore, that such sensitive and beautiful and delightful examples of God's creative powers, our neighbors on earth, how important that they should receive our love, our care, our protection, and all we can do to help them on their pathway in life. I read the other day a case of a peculiar sensitivity in an animal, apparently to shame. I know, and I'm sure many of you know, dogs can't bear to be laughed at. They're very sensitive to ridicule. One should never ridicule them or laugh at them. They seem to know about it. But this is not quite the same, this story which was published. A dog, a very favorite dog called Bess. Bess had a very independent character. She was a great family pet. But the one thing which she could not become adjusted to, and that was, to her, the humiliation of being taken out for a walk on a leash. She slunk away, though she longed to walk, when the leash came out. the evening walks, it was in the town, had to be controlled. One day, however, the leash disappeared. Couldn't be found. And so a rather thick rope had to be used. Bess looked at the rope, went out once with it, evidently couldn't bear the humiliation of the worst treatment of a rope, so was seen to go underneath the veranda steps and bring out the leash. And drop it at her master's feet. Well, can we think of them all as being subjected to the nameless horrors which they meet at our hands? I'm not going to harrow your feelings, but vivisection is, if you will really study it, an unbelievable and unbearable horror. Things that are done to animals, the abnormalities that are practiced upon them, blocking up of the channels in pregnancy, for example. Now I see they're grafting a second head onto dogs. And they've also got a dog's head living by attaching an artificial heart to it. And the head has been held up, tears rolling down its eyes, just a head. It's going on at this moment, friends. Whilst we're sitting here in safety and comfort. Hundreds of thousands of animals are shrieking in agony and torture. And the vivisectors' clamps and troughs, electrical stimuli on the brain and eyes, vocal organs cut so they can't cry out in many cases, so they're not howling. And in the slaughterhouses, and elsewhere, this ugliness, this bitter, cruel evil is rampant in the world today. That's why we are here. And that's why we are working as well as we can. A bad part of the business of cruelty, and I use the term advisedly, because, of course, there's a tremendous amount of money in it all. Money is the motive, you know, for everything that's inflicted upon animals has as its motive both money and fame. I've been particularly distressed this last few weeks in my study of this subject by accounts of the effects upon children who are brought into it, you know. In the schools, they practice in the biology classes all kinds of vivisection. Not all kinds, no, that's an exaggeration. Many undesirable forms of experimentation on animals. Virginia, her name's been withheld. Virginia has produced cancer in guinea pigs. She's 15, by the by. By inoculating them with excessive dosages of a female hormone. Talk to Virginia and you will hear this story. I have proved that an over amount of estrogen causes cancer in the sex organs. In my basement laboratory, over a period of 4 months, I gave weekly injections to my guinea pigs and produced malignant tissue. Look, you can see it for yourself, how large it is. First of all, that's the female sex. Secondly, it's a child. Utterly unfeeling. A friend has been much perturbed over a nutritional experiment conducted by her daughter's high school. Many children taking home pairs of hamsters, one to be fed and live, the other to be deprived of essential foods and die. I must make it quite clear, however, that these things of which I've just spoken, concerning methods of teaching in school and the effects upon children, that these things did not occur and do not occur in New Zealand. All that I have told you about happened abroad. I have others, but I haven't time to read to you this rather alarming aspect of the subject. The bedulling of the sensitivity and the feeling of kindness and compassion towards animals in the young people. That's one reason why we in CAWO carry out our poster competitions. We believe that on the contrary, we've got to reach the young people as soon as they're old enough to understand and be affected, so that they will go on to build a better world and a better civilization when they begin to be responsible and help to reduce the amount of this appalling cruelty and suffering. Now why are we so convinced that world humaneness is an urgent necessity, as my title indicates? For several reasons, of which I've been able to think of at least seven, I'll touch on them, on each one of them. My opinions, now to be expressed, don't involve any one of the four component societies. This is an entirely personal address. In which I shall express my personal views only. My first point I see is reason for humaneness number one: to end war and ensure peace. I suppose you'd agree that that is man's greatest necessity of today, whilst very near it, of course, comes health. Yes, but how can cruelty to animals, vivisection, stag hunting, cruel sports, bullfighting, hunting, slaughterhouse work, how can that have anything to do with war and peace? I believe a very, very great deal. A decisive influence, I think. Why? Well, apart from the effect of those practices upon the character of man and the character of the individual, the all-important single person, apart from that, there is, in my belief, in existence and in operation, an inevitable law of cause and effect. I believe that all life the whole universe, and all human experience are governed by an exact law of compensation, action and reaction, cause and effect, sowing and reaping, if you like. And the appropriate effect, I believe, follows exactly the generative cause. Appropriate reaction follows every action. And I believe the whole world of human life and experience is a kind of ever-growing network of interaction between man's conduct and the reactions upon himself. And I believe this applies not only to us, each one of us, as individuals, but to groups and nations as a whole. St. Paul put it, of course, whatsoever a man soweth, he began more strongly than that, God is not mocked. Whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. Genesis, whoso sheddeth man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed. Whoso lives by the sword shall die by the sword. Now, you'll notice that our Lord insisted upon this as a kind of central doctrine of his whole teaching. For verily I say unto you, till heaven and earth pass, one jot or one tittle shall in no wise pass from the law till all be fulfilled. Very strong, you see. And it is easier for heaven and earth to pass than for one tittle of the law to fail. Ignored. Judge not that ye be not judged, he said. For with what judgment ye judge, ye shall be judged. And with what measure ye mete, it shall be meted to you again. Therefore, and here comes the familiar and far too much ignored enunciation of law. Therefore, all things whatsoever ye would that men should do unto you, do ye unto them also, for this is the law and the prophets. As much as to say, the last word, the Alpha and Omega. Now, what is man sowing? He's sowing the most horrible cruelty to his fellow men and to the whole animal kingdom of nature. Mountingly, the results, two of them, are major adversities. The continual threat and occasional outbreak of destructive wars and the mounting toll of disease. Now, I think, and this is a purely personal view, doesn't involve the component societies or anyone else, but I believe that there we have cause and effect. And that we will not have peace on earth between man and man until we have peace between man and animal. Because there's a law of cause and effect. Second reason for the urgency of this cause, friends. Just mentioned it. The increasing prevalence of disease and the increasing failure to prevent it. And in certain diseases, successfully to treat it by orthodox medicine. Again, I think the disease arises from two main causes. The first is the infliction of pain upon sentient beings whether animals or men. After studying the problem of health and working for health for about 40 years, I've come to the conclusion that one of the major causes of the ill health of man is cruelty. Mass cruelty by the nations and individual cruelty by individuals. I know I've just been very sick unto death myself. I accept the law. All is just. Effect follows cause. We must get back to the effect. And I suggest that the first one is the infliction of pain, and the second is the wrong conduct of life, wrong care of the body. Meat eating, for example, contributes to both of these causes. It depends upon the infliction of wanton infliction of cruel pain upon the food animals, and of course it introduces into the body highly toxic, highly putrefactive substances. How can we be well? Of course our hospitals are overcrowded, and our prisons too. In this modern age, with all the advances of science, we are continually building larger hospitals, asylums, and prisons. I know of only one cure, and it's ethical. Not medical, it's ethical. Though the medical treatment is extremely important and to be valued within limitations. The right relationships between man and man. Health depends upon humaneness, without which it cannot be permanently enjoyed. I have finally come to believe. And the same applies to man's relationship to animals. What is my third point in advocation of the urgent necessity today for widespread, for world humaneness? I believe, and again this is personal, that man is an unfolding being. Not the body so much, but the real person. The inner, immortal individuality. The divine self. In what St. Paul called the spiritual body. That's unfolding. It's on a great pilgrimage to what St. Paul called the stature of the perfect man. Now, I believe that evolutionary progress is being very seriously held up, and the development warped, twisted, marred by this one great error into which we've all fallen for so long and are falling today, cruelty. We need, therefore, to cleanse our souls from cruelty and blood guilt if we are to unfold in beauty, as we should, having been made in God's image. And the perfected man will be a gentle, a kind, a humane, and a compassionate being, moved by an all-embracing love, that I feel sure, as was our Lord, even though behind all of that there's an invincible power. Now that's our destiny as a whole race. Each one of us as a person here, we are unfolding pilgrim gods. Well, if our hands are wet with red blood, and our souls stained with this mark of Cain and of cruelty, well, how can we at least rapidly, unfold in beauty and wisdom and kindness into a Christ-like nature, living a Christ-like life. We can't. And as I ponder this whole question, as I deeply do, of the spiritual welfare, unfoldment, progress of man, I'm confronted in my inner thinking by the obstacle which man himself erects of impurity and blood guilt and deliberate infliction of immeasurable pain upon the members of the animal kingdom weaker than himself and for personal profit and pleasure. No justification for it at all. It's a very important matter, friends, this. Because you see, it affects not only humanity as it is today, but humanity onwards down the ages as it progresses slowly towards the fulfillment of its glorious destiny, which our Lord described in the words, "Be ye therefore perfect, even as your Father which is in heaven is perfect." Now out of that, my next point arises, my fourth conviction of the necessity for humaneness. This again won't necessarily appeal to all. Not a dogma of any animal welfare movement. There aren't any. But I personally believe, friends, that animals have that within them which is also unfolding. And they're undergoing an evolutionary progress. Or if you like to put it in the more popular terms, I personally do believe, because of the sensitivity, intelligence, love and devotion and powers of self-sacrifice which they display, I do believe that animals have souls. And if they have souls, then the divine soul is in them. And as all things unfold from less to more, so the soul life of the animal kingdom of nature, I have been forced to this conclusion, is all evolving through these animal bodies. The divine life, I think, is present within them and unfolding to a higher state in animals, just as it is in us. Cruelty retards. I don't have to argue that, do I? Cruelty retards. Humaneness quickens the evolutionary progress of those animals that receive cruelty or humane treatment at the hand of man. Yes, I feel I'm going a little further. If we try to place the animal kingdom on the ladder of evolving life with ourselves on one particular rung, well, then the animals will be at present on a lower rung because they don't have self-conscious individuality like we do. They have instinct and group emotion and thought. But they're evolving and they're near to us and we can either quicken, yes, that's it, we can either quicken their progress, do nothing to it, or third, we can hasten it. So I think there's a fourth reason for humaneness towards animals. To quicken their evolution. Help them on their upward way. And I like to think of them, and I do think of them. And I hope this won't sound extreme to you all. I know it won't to many, but those new to these kind of thoughts. I like to think of us as the elder brothers of members of the same family who are younger, feeling instinctively a kinship with them, following, however imperfectly, the creed of kinship in all the affairs of life, and therefore feeling that we should, instead of hindering them by cruelty, be quickening their progress, drawing out their best qualities, not their horror and fear and anger and rebellion, but their love, their devotion, their power to understand. And so, fulfill what I believe is a responsibility to nature, or if you wish to use religious terms, to God, by helping out his great plan of progress for these our younger brothers. Any one of these so far mentioned reasons. Each one of them is for me final and decisive, but there are so many. A fifth one is to banish ugliness from the face of the earth and to increase the beauty of man's surroundings and civilization. Not so tangible. It is really, it's not sufficiently regarded, I believe, the importance, the significance of both ugliness and beauty, and even of beauty as the acid test of a person, nation, and the race. How beautiful are you? Not how many guns you've got, or atomic bombs, or, I'm not speaking politically, nor condemning atomic bombs. That's not my subject. But not how many of those, and how many rockets, you know, and how many, how much power have you got, but rather how much beauty. Are you expressing, and has your nation shed upon the world? Important. But what is more ugly than cruelty? What is more horribly ugly than a slaughterhouse? If you doubt me, just go and spend half an hour. It's enough, if you can bear it, at the killing pen and the butchering building into which the killed, stunned animals fall. Horribly, disgustingly ugly. Not only there, but the whole miasmic surroundings. I'm not an extremist as a speaker, but I'm going to use a strong word. I don't like it, but I'm going to use it. The horrible miasma and the beastly stench, beastly stench, which emanates from slaughterhouses. And here we are seeking sensitivity, refinement, and progress, and here we are, for money only, quite unnecessarily, by cruelty, ugliness, and the basest activities, shedding ugliness in the world. I'm not criticizing those who follow the meat trade, because I'm one with them and part of them and share whatever guilt they may have. Neither am I preaching at them. They are doing what they believe to be something quite legitimate in trade. And the slaughtermen are a decent body of people, earning their money that way, taking it home for their wives and children. I recognize all that. But I'm repelled in horror by the whole beastly cruelty and ugliness of it all. So I want it done away with. My next main heading is to bring about world humaneness in order to save animals, children, women, the aged, the weak, and the dependent from suffering and sorrow. I believe that pain matters tremendously. I believe that pain happens, matters tremendously. And we don't take it seriously enough. And we don't appreciate always its great importance and the necessity for saving sentient beings, human and animal, from unnecessary pain. And you know the definition of cruelty is the infliction of unnecessary pain. My last heading and thought follows out of that: world humaneness and our personal humaneness are urgent necessities, because the divine quality of love is denied by cruelty and given expression by humaneness. And there is no higher quality than an impersonal, saving, serving, non-possessive love. And I'm using the term in the highest sense. Something which lives deep in the heart, and which flows out to all one's fellow men, whether they're sinners or saints, on the thrones or in the gutter, and often overflows to the animal kingdom as well. One of the most ennobling and beautifying qualities of character which man can possibly develop and express. So for love's sake, humaneness is an urgent necessity. I believe that the new age which is dawning will be an age of humaneness, of experienced unity with each other, and therefore of love. And cruelty, like a monstrous devil stalking abroad, bars the way to this highest and most wonderful development in man. And once that love is really felt, universal love, one shrinks from cruelty and works for humaneness. And so for love's sake, perhaps that sums it all up. It does for me. Let us reduce the amount of pain, which we unnecessary pain, which we inflict on others, and increase the amount of helpful, loving service and protection which we can extend to them. And I think that most of the world's humanitarians are thus moved. They may have arguments such as those, and others, perhaps more cogent. But if you get talking to them, and it's my privilege to be doing so the world over. They're really moved by compassion. They can't bear it, and they must do something about it. If it's only so little, they do it. Take flesh-free diet, for example, and I'm not promulgating any movement, thinking in general with you. There are many reasons, arguments in support of a flesh-free diet. The anatomy of man isn't suited to it. Has no anatomical elements like those of specifically carnivorous animals. All the food man needs of every kind is readily obtainable from the plant kingdom. Animals get diseases which are transmitted to man. Meat eating itself introduces toxins into the body. And so on. Yes, there are these arguments, I suppose. Yes, they're true. But if you really get to talk with worldwide vegetarians, you will find that at the bottom, in their hearts, none of those really have moved them wholly. It is that they have come to experience a kind of inner sense of unity with their fellow men and with all life. Many of them are really mystics in the best sense of the word. And because they feel at one, for example, with the animal kingdom of nature and the life therein, they cannot participate any longer in the cruelties inseparable from the meat trade. So the anti-vivisectionists, so the Animal Protection Society, so all workers for animal welfare, and if I may say so, my colleagues and I myself here in New Zealand, have as this our seventh and perhaps strongest reason for wanting world humaneness. For the sake of love and compassion, expressed in service to the divine life in other beings and other creatures. Such, friends, then, are the thoughts I share with you. And though I've spoken a little strongly on occasion, I can tell you that I haven't come anywhere near expressing the fire that's burning in me. And has burnt for 40 years or more. Concerning the need for love and kindness to the animal kingdom of nature.